Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Lori Gottlieb, a psychotherapist, and you're an advice columnist for The Atlantic, right, as well, and also writing a really new book, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, joins me in studio. And Lori, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So I asked you off air, a lot of dumb questions today, but what is a psychotherapist versus a therapist versus a psychiatrist versus, I don't know if I got them all, but walk us through what you do and the differences between some of these words.
It has to do with the different license. So I'm a marriage and family therapist, which is a psychotherapist. Somebody who has a PhD in clinical psychology will be a psychologist, and people who prescribe medication are psychiatrists.
Okay. I think I got it there. But you work with psychiatrists who do prescribe medication.
Yes. So if I have a patient who's taking antidepressants, but I'm doing talk therapy with that person, I work in conjunction with a psychiatrist.
Okay. Talk us about your book, because you were talking about how you also go see a therapist as a psychotherapist. So first and foremost, is that common in your industry?
I think it is, but I think that people don't talk about it, and I think our patients don't really think about that.
Right.
I think for some reason they think that we might have our lives together and that we don't need therapy.
That you have all the answers. Why would you need to talk to somebody else?
Right, right. And we don't. And I think but that makes us really effective, right? Because the reason that in the book I follow four patients, but I also follow a fifth patient, which is me, in therapy with my own therapist. And I do that because I didn't want to be the expert up on high. I wanted to show my humanity, because when I'm working with patients, my humanity is actually the most effective tool that I have in helping them.
You know, it's interesting. I was talking to you off the air about Tony the Sopranos and how that was my introduction to the world of therapy. I think I knew about what therapists were, and I watched a Frasier, so I knew about Dr. Crane. That's, and, you know, through pop culture, that's a lot of ways people get into this sort of stuff. But Tony's therapist also saw a therapist, and that raised a query to me. But I guess, like you say, it's not only good for your own mental health, which is important. Do you find that you learn things too? Like what your therapist does, take some of those tools and use them with your patients? Or do you have your own set way of doing things and you're in those ways?
No, I learned a lot from him. You know, as a therapist, we don't get to see other therapists work because we're alone in the room
right.
with our patients. So, you know, he was kind of quirky and non-traditional. He had, you know, very good boundaries, but he brought his personality into the room, and it really taught me that I could be myself in the room with my patients. And I think also sometimes he used these great metaphors. Like at one point he said, you know, you remind me of this cartoon of this prisoner shaking the bars and he can't get out, but on the right and the left, the bars are open. And I think for so many of us, it was such a great metaphor because we feel trapped and yet the way out is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, of course, then drove to my office and said that five times
yes.
in the next 5 hours.
Gave no credit to
and didn't attribute it to my therapist.
Interesting you mentioned the personality thing, because I wondered when you're sitting in that room and you're chatting with someone and they're chatting with you and you're talking through these things, you imagine that it's only natural, I think, in your position to put up a barrier, a wall, to almost feel like you shouldn't be yourself, that you are this professional and you're doing this. So I imagine that's difficult for a lot of therapists or psychotherapists to go into that room and be themselves while also having that education, that background, and what the tools that they need to help someone.
I think we use both. We're very strategic and intentional in what we say, but we're also very human. And so we're reacting on both levels. And that was what I'm showing in the book, is that you see me in the room with my patients, and I'm very much a professional, but I'm me. And then you see me in the room with my therapist, and then I'm just a regular, you know, human being dealing with the daily problems of living.
Well, I imagine that you mentioned the four patients before yourself. Are they real patients? Are they based on caricatures of them? Are they, they've given you full credit to talk about the sorts of things they talk about? How was that in writing the book? That must be an interesting process to go through.
They're real people, and I have their permission, and I chose four very different people. You have sort of this narcissistic, sort of abrasive Hollywood producer who's very insulting to me at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
but he's the guy I think that we come to love the most. You have this older woman who feels like she messed up her life, her adult children won't talk to her, and she has some marriages behind her, and she is about to turn 70 and wants things to change. You have a young person in her 20s who keeps hooking up with the wrong guys, and you have a young woman who's newly married and who is diagnosed with breast cancer. So you've got very different people, but I think that we can see aspects of ourselves in every single one of them.
Mm-hmm. And that, I imagine, helps break down the stigma. I mean, I think that we're having better conversations now than we were five or 10 years ago about mental health issues. And you and I talked about that. Celebrities talk about this very openly. I think people in the office are much more comfortable saying, oh, my therapist thinks this, or I was talking to my therapist about that. I imagine we have a ways to go, but you must feel good about the direction we're headed as a country.
I do. I feel like so many people are finally able to talk about what they're struggling with. So there's the Facebook, Instagram version of life.
Right.
But I think everybody knows that that's not real. And more people don't want to feel alone in their struggles, and they're starting to open up and talk to people, whether that's a therapist or people in their lives. And there's not, you know, I think a lot of the shame around that has gone away. We still have a long way to go, though.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that for, like, major things, I think, you know, a lot of people are very able to go, well, you know, soldiers coming home, they experience PTSD. That seems like a very obvious thing that and we all want to help our returning soldiers. But it's people in the supermarket. It's everyone. It's you and me. We're all dealing with a lot of different things. Obviously, it's to different degrees and different severities and different types of trauma. But I imagine that once a few of us start having those conversations, it becomes easier for the other people to have it too.
It does. So many men in particular come into my office and say, I've never told anyone this before. And then what they tell me, you know, I think it's going to be this big revelation, is so mild, in my opinion.
Really? And well, so you've heard a lot, I'm sure.
But I mean that they're embarrassed to talk to their guy friends about it. And I think women will say, I haven't told anyone this before, except for my mother, my sister, and my best friend. You know,
so they will open up
to somebody about it.
What is there a litmus test for knowing whether someone should seek out help from a mental health professional?
I think that we have this weird thing where we if something is wrong physically with us, we'll go to a doctor and get it checked out.
No problem.
But if something feels off with our emotions, we wait a long time. And I think that if you are suffering or if you feel like something is off, why not go see someone before it becomes a crisis? Because if you come later, it's much harder to treat and you've suffered unnecessarily.
Well, I think a lot of people wait for like certain benchmarks, a breakup, a divorce, or a change in the work situation. Moving to a new place, and then they go, well, that's why I feel like this. And either that's comforting to them, that there's a reason behind it, or that's the impetus. Now I'll go seek help because I had this big thing happen to me and it's trouble. But I think for the majority of us, it's, you know, a lot of everyday life things that happen over the course of time can really cause us trauma and anguish. And I think that sometimes we're waiting for the sign. And maybe that's because it's well behind us. It's not coming up. It's already passed.
That's right. I talk in the book about how there's no hierarchy of pain, that pain is pain. And so sometimes people think, well, you know, I'm feeling sad or I'm anxious, but I don't know why, you know, hashtag first world problems.
Right.
I have a roof over my head.
You're absolutely right with that. We make excuses. We say, how could I? Yes.
Yeah, we minimize it. And what happens is if you tamp down the feelings, they actually get bigger. And they need air. And eventually it will come out in some way, but you don't want to wait for that to happen.
Okay, here's another myth, I imagine. Getting a therapist, that sounds too expensive. A psychotherapist, I can't afford that. Are insurance companies better than they used to be about helping out with mental health? Are they worse? Is it something that only people that have a bunch of disposable income can do?
Healthcare is really problematic in this country, whether it's for physical health or mental health. But there are clinics that are low cost or no cost. There are all kinds of ways that people can go see somebody, even if it's not, you know, through their insurance plan.
Okay, so then another thing that I hear people talk about, and maybe this is as I think about these things, okay, how long do I need to go for? And I imagine it's a very personal individual. I imagine some people love, I listen to this podcast, these two women do this incredible podcast called My Favorite Murder, which sounds remote, you know, a little morose. It's a great podcast, they're comedians, they're funny, and one talks openly about their regular appointment, and they swear by it. It's like what they look forward to in the week, and they are going to do it till the day that they die. Is that what more of us need to be doing, or is it more of an individual case by case? See how you feel.
I think that's a misconception about therapy, that people are afraid to go because they think, if I go there, I'll be stuck there
forever.
For years.
Yes, right?
I'll never leave.
Right.
And that's just not true. From the beginning, we want to know what your goals are, why you're there, and what you want to accomplish when you're there. And we assess as we go along where you are. And people leave, even, you know, I don't know if anyone is quote-unquote finished, meaning they leave when they feel good enough. They don't have have to, you know, and they can come back if they want.
Right.
But we don't want to keep you there. We want to encourage your independence. We want to help you learn how to deal with your own struggles and manage better. We want to hold up a mirror to you and help you see your blind spots and the ways you keep shooting yourself in the foot and ending up in the same place over and over. And once you get to those things, you're much better equipped to deal with navigating day-to-day life. And so you don't necessarily need us at that point.
I don't know if you were prepared to be having to answer for all my therapy questions here today. You're kind of acting as my radio therapist at this exact moment, but I've got so many of them. And the another one that I hear people say, and maybe it's just because Tony Soprano used to always say this, you're spending a lot of money, or maybe your healthcare provider is spending some money on this session, and you're not getting a ton of answers, or you're talking in circles, or you are getting answers, but it's something, oh, your friend could have helped you out with that, or your mom, or your brother. What is it about having a professional there that, I mean, obviously it must be the years of training and that goes into why someone should talk to a professional as opposed to just their friend?
So in the book, I talk about the difference between idiot compassion and wise compassion. And your friends will give you idiot compassion, which is that if you say, my boss is such a jerk, or this is what my partner did, or whatever, your friend is going to take your side. A therapist is going to help you look at maybe your role in the situation or your response to the situation so that you can change the pattern that's going on instead of just feeling victimized by what's happening.
What made you decide to write the book?
I wrote the book because I really wanted to bring people back into the therapy room and let them see real people getting through real struggles, and also demystify what therapy is. I think people have such strange notions about what it is.
Right, and that's a really good point. And I've never been to a therapist. I came close once. My parents and I talked about it when I was kind of in the doldrums for an extended period of time. And I think had I not gotten a job that really interested me, I might have been there a couple weeks later. I don't know. I picture exactly what I've seen on TV. I picture the couch and the silent mms and ahs from a gentleman or a woman on the other end with a pencil. I picture a what should be a judgment-free zone, but maybe the feeling of judgment. Maybe dispel some of that for me. What happens when someone walks into your office?
When someone walks into my office, I want to hear more about what's going on in their life. You know, it's a very rich human experience. It's not the cold, distant person who says,
right.
And our time is up, and
yes,
you're sort of like, what just
happened? Yes.
Right. No, it's not that. And in fact, we're Eva Longoria is developing the book for a television show, and what I want to portray in that is just a person who happens to be a therapist, because I think that that's a much more realistic view of, you know, who your therapist is and what your therapist is thinking, so that people feel more comfortable getting help if they need it.
Where do we need to go still more as a country? Is it about having more of these conversations? I guess the country, and limited to that, the world as a whole. Is it about more people going into therapy, or just at least feeling comfortable with the idea of it, or at least talking about it openly and having no issue whatsoever in doing so?
One of the things I see, no matter what people are coming in for, is an underlying sense of loneliness. I feel like we aren't connecting. We don't have organic opportunities to connect face-to-face with another
person. Is it social media? I mean, is it really
I think people are driving into it? People are walking around with their phones. You know, when you're in a therapy room, nothing's pinging or vibrating or beeping. There are no screens on the wall. Like when you're in a restaurant, your phones aren't out. It's a very different experience. And physiologically, your heart rate gets lower. You're calmer. More people need to be face-to-face with the people who matter to them in their lives. So a lot of couples will say, at night we're co-computing, you know, we're sitting in the same room and we're on our computers. You need to be able to have a conversation, go for a walk, you know, have a meal without any screens. Really connect with the people who are important to you.
What are the best ways to convince someone that you might love that they should maybe explore this route to prevent, God forbid, them hurting themselves, or to a lesser degree just continuing to be sad for a long time? Someone who's really skeptical, what's a good way to maybe say this might be for you?
I think I'll start with the wrong way, which is the wrong way is you have a problem.
Right, okay.
Right? Because nobody wants to hear that. I think the approach is that I really love you and care about you, and I see that you're struggling, and I don't want to see you struggle so much. Maybe we can go together, or you can go and talk to somebody, and you don't have to stay. Just just go see what it is.
Parents and grandparents, is there an age too young? Is it, I mean, obviously when you're talking about teenagers, you're talking about a lot of hormonal issues. Everyone has a bad day when you're a teenager, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they need medical help or they need professional help, I should say. But at what point is it okay, or should a kid maybe be considered a teenager, considered to go talk to a professional? Maybe even earlier than some adults, because they don't have quite the coping mechanisms.
You know what's funny is teenagers will go kicking and screaming, right, to therapy.
Right.
But once they're there, they love it, because they will tell you things that they will never tell their parents about their lives. And teenagers need guidance, and they know they do. Their friends aren't necessarily the best people to give them advice.
Talking about idiot advice. Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so they love talking to a trusted adult who's going to keep their confidentiality, and no one's going to know what they're saying. So even though it might be hard to get them in, once they're in, they really like it, and they really like that their parents don't know what they're talking about.
We are talking about a real world right now issue in Chicago. We've had, unfortunately, a lot of police officers commit suicide in this past couple of years. A striking number. I don't have them in front of me, but I wouldn't surprise me if in the last 3 or 4 years we've reached double digits, and each time it's a big story. Firefighters the same way. A lot of first responders see a lot of things that we would hope to never see. First responders deal with a lot of people on their worst day, and that comes home with them. But a lot of them also have the qualities. I've come from a family of firefighters. We can take care of this. We're macho guys. We can do that. And maybe some of them can. But that's an answer for our first responders, too, right? I think a lot of people that experience things, just even if they don't even know that they are depressed, maybe just chatting, or maybe we should make the access available to them a little bit better through our fire departments and our police departments.
Yeah.
It's a loaded question, I know. But
well, I think that the culture is one of, you know, we're very strong and stiff upper lip, and we don't need to talk to somebody. But what they're seeing is very upsetting. It's very traumatic, and it does help sometimes to have a place where you can talk about that and release it a little bit and not have to carry it around all by yourself.
Did you mention you do couple therapy as well?
I do.
So I got to ask, because we're in this divided political climate, and I talked to Heidi Stevens, who's a columnist for the Chicago Tribune, about politically divided families. I think a lot of people end up with someone that is politically aligned with them, but have you seen more people coming in that at least politics might be playing some role in some of their issues, or could that just be a surface level thing with other things going on in the background?
I actually do see that.
Really?
I see, because I think more people are really paying attention to politics in a way that they maybe hadn't in the past. And so I think especially with younger couples who are much more engaged in what's going on in the world and what's going on in the country, you know, they have arguments about it. But it's all grist for the mill. It's good for them to learn how to understand that just because you love each other doesn't mean you're the same person, and you can have different ideas and different opinions and understand more about why the person has that opinion, and it doesn't necessarily mean what you think it does.
The book is Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. People pick it up where they buy normal bookstores, and anything else exciting coming up for you?
Just on this book tour.
I was just going to say, yeah, you just wrote this book, and I'm like, what's next for you? No, you're probably like, I just wrote the darn thing. Yeah, so you're on the book tour traveling around, and I imagine the response has been fun.
The response has been great. It's been really gratifying to see how people really connect with the people in the book.
Lori Gottlieb, psychotherapist, thanks for explaining what that is. An advice columnist, dear therapist at The Atlantic, and Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. Thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
More on WGN after this.